I don't know if any of you would remember this story, but a couple of years ago, there was a young man who was attending an Iowa State football game who had a chance to get behind the cameras and the reporters for ESPN. And as they were preparing to broadcast the day's game, and he held up a poster, a handwritten poster that said, "Busch Light Supply Needs Replenished," along with his Venmo username. Venmo, for those of you who are not smartphone fanatics, Venmo is an application whereby people can just transfer cash to each other digitally. And so basically this guy was asking, you know, everybody watching ESPN that day to replenish his beer fund. The sign and the stunt started as a joke, but soon his phone started blowing up with notifications from Venmo. He raised about $400 in 30 minutes, and as donations poured in, he realized that there were better things that he could do with this money than buy Busch Light. Now, for some beer people, there would be almost anything you could do that would be better with the money than buy Busch Light. But in his particular case, he decided to keep enough money for one case of beer and donated the rest to Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital for the support of pediatric patients and their families. Well, word spread about that, and the following Tuesday, more than $20,000 was in his Venmo account to be given to the Children's Hospital. And after that, Busch Light and Venmo caught wind of the effort, and by the following Sunday, $1 million had been raised. One day, this young man was pulling stunts to buy beer. The next day, it turned out he was involved in a very different game, raising money for sick children and their families. And there's something about that story that captures, I think, in the arc of that story, that captures what Jesus is trying to get at in this strangest of all parables, about how we use our money, and more, how we use our minds and our efforts and our intelligence to do God's work. The arc of the story is about what game we're playing and on whose behalf and why. A manager is accused of squandering his boss's property and is about to lose his job. Fearful for his future, he cooks up a plan in the waning hours of his employment to cook the books so that at least he will have friends among his boss's debtors. He slashes bills in hopes for a favor or two in return, dinner and a place to sleep when he's unemployed and been turned out on his ear. "I know what I can do," he says, "so that I will get a welcome and perhaps a new job when I have to leave this place." So far, so good. We can imagine somebody acting like that, I suspect. But the story has a surprise twist. The rich man, the boss, whom we would expect to be even more angry with his dishonest employee, instead commends the dishonest manager because he has acted shrewdly, calling him in almost to say, "You know, instead of firing you, I'm going to give you a promotion. We'll put you on a performance plan. Maybe you can use a little bit of that energy you use slashing bills and making friends to further my enterprise." He's been clever under pressure, this dishonest manager, seeing what opportunities he had and making the most of them, like a young man who sees that ESPN is going to be there and figures this might be his chance to get another case of beer. And the boss can appreciate it, because it's a quality that gets you ahead in the world, shrewdness. A quality that can make you money. If the manager just puts a fraction, just a fraction of this intelligence into the master's business, it's going to be good for the bottom line.
That the story ends with the boss saying good job is usually the stumbling block I have experienced for church folks in hearing this passage, because we are used to thinking of the rich man, the landowner, as being God. We hear it as Jesus saying, good job, dishonest manager, and wondering what in the world could that possibly mean for us who have come to understand the commandments of God as being, as requiring our honesty and integrity above all. But the story, if you read carefully, the story does not say that the rich man is like God or that Jesus identifies with the landowner at all. Jesus is instead making a point about the way this world works and about how shrewdness, creativity, intelligence can be really valuable in this world when we're trying to build up money and profit, when we're trying to figure out how to secure our own futures. The children of this age, he said, are more shrewd in dealing with those of their own generation than are the children of light. And I think there he means the manager, the landowner, and the debtors all together. It's a whole system of people who are trying to find and rejoicing in what's good for me financially. It's a great game. The thing Jesus wants us to see, and it's a great game, and the people are good at playing it, I guess I should say. There's a real intelligence to this that's somehow admirable. It's a great game, but Jesus' point is, it's the wrong game. The game that Jesus would like his followers to be playing looks a little bit more like taking that intelligence and putting it toward kingdom purposes, like using your 15 minutes of fame and your blowing up phone and your Bush Light money to raise $1 million for sick kids. Keep the cleverness, Jesus says. Change the goal and the purpose and the rationale. The main thing, in other words, Jesus wants us to see, is that it's not, our future is not on our own shoulders to secure, and the main thing that matters is not our bottom line. The main thing is serving God and others. Today's bulletin cover, for those of you who are here in the building, I think puts this very starkly. And you know, this is one of these things that just got, Lois, can I borrow your bulletin? So I can hold it up for the camera for the Zoom folks. I had this all lined up before we had this thing with the microphones, but the bulletin cover just puts it starkly. When I came in yesterday to set up some things, I was just struck by how clearly it says it. It's a cross that says, you cannot serve God and wealth. Boom. Those are the games that Jesus is putting in front of us. You can pick one. You can't have both. The cross on the cover, though, tells us that we have been redeemed for one particular kind of game, or better said, we have been redeemed for life on different terms than just trying to seek our own good. Sure, we can pour a lot of money, a lot of energy into money. Money can become even an idol when we put a lot of our thoughts to it, earning it, keeping it, making it grow, spending it on just the right things that we think will increase our happiness. We get especially motivated when we think our future or our popularity is hanging in the balance. So maybe most of us have never held up a, Venmo sign on national television, but there's something about that that feels recognizable, which is why so many folks sent the kids some cash, even if they thought Bush Light shouldn't be called beer. Wouldn't we all like a stash of something we really like? But the cross on the cover tells us that we have been redeemed for life on different terms. And quite apart from financial windfall, God has given us treasures that no dollar can purchase. Grace, life, forgiveness, salvation. A life where the goodness of the future does not have to be earned or saved for, but merely received, because the future belongs to God and remains with God and is given by God. And we've been bought for that future with a price. The life of God's own Son, who comes into this world where people play games with money, with wealth, with human lives, in hopes of making a name for themselves. Jesus comes into this world knowing that this is the game the world plays. But he refuses the world's terms. On the cross, it appeared as though he'd lost the future forever. But God raised him up. And now his cross, which graces our sanctuary and our bulletin cover, which many of us wear on the necklace around our necks, now that cross has been a sign of the game for which we have been redeemed to play. Now it's life in the kingdom and its values that matter. These are the things that endure: money, popularity, success. You cannot take that with you when you go. In this life, gathered around that cross, we get a taste of the kingdom. We don't yet experience it to its fullness. We still live with dollars as a daily currency. When Jesus says, "Make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth," though, he's hoping that we're going to look at that currency, those dollars, through the lens of eternity. He hopes that we'll remember that we have been redeemed in order to give. Because like that young man with his Venmo windfall, we have been given more than we've ever asked for or deserved. By God's grace, we are on the field of the kingdom. He would treasure it if we offered our cleverness in addition to our dollars to the effort. God would treasure it if we offered our creativity and our determination, if we were crafty about our generosity, as shrewd about our sharing as we are about our saving. If we asked, "How can I make calls that serve the good of all?" Having been bought with a price, how could we not? Amen.